little bit down because of the weather. We hope everybody will stay safe when they get home this evening and be weather alert. But for those that are here and for those that are watching online, we'll be studying Lesson 17 this evening, which is Genesis 31 through 33:17. So we will get started with a quick review of last time. We were talking about Jacob's dream that he had and God giving him the promises. We talked about him going from Beersheba. If you recall, he was fleeing from Esau, but he travels from Beersheba to Haran, but he stops at Luz at the time. It gets renamed to Bethel based on his experience, but he dreams of a ladder, that famous story that we remember since we were kids, angels ascending and descending off that ladder. God appeared above the ladder and talks to him from there and gives him those promises. The land, nation, and sea. We started talking about those being given to Abraham, talked about those being given to Isaac. Now we're talking about those promises being given to Jacob as well. Personal blessing, just like we talked about with Abraham, there's a personal blessing that was given in the lesson where God tells Jacob, "Behold, I am with you wherever you go." And that becomes important because we're going to know that he flourishes quite a bit from the time he leaves, because one of the things we talked about is he left with nothing because he was fleeing. He left with absolutely nothing to give when he gets to Haran. He awakes from his sleep after that dream, and he talks about how awesome the place is. He sets up a pillar, and then he calls the place Bethel, which means house of God. So Luz becomes Bethel. He vowed that the Lord would be his God, and he also vowed he would give a tenth of all. After this point, he moves on and gets to Haran. When he gets there, he gets to a well, and there's some people waiting to water their animals and stuff when he gets there, and he gets into a conversation with some men there. He's about 77 at this time. They tell him, when he's asking about if they know who Laban is and is he well, and they end up saying, "Well, there's Rachel, his daughter, coming to you." So she arrives to water her sheep. Jacob waters the flocks for her. He kisses her, weeps, and tells her that, "I'm your father's relative." She runs home and tells Laban about that. Then Laban comes into the picture and gives a very warm welcome to him. It describes Jacob being there for about a month. And then after that month, they enter into discussions about payment for the service Jacob was providing to Laban. And we get into the story about the daughters. You got Leah being the older one, Rachel being the younger. It describes her as being very beautiful. Jacob offers to work for her, to marry her for 7 years. And it describes there that those 7 years went by as if they were nothing to him, as if only a few days, because he loved her. Jacob, after this time, says to Laban, "You know, I've served my time, give me my wife." And it seems like Laban is going to agree. He puts together a marriage feast, but there's deception involved with that, because as we get to the next slide here, the review is Leah is the one that's actually given to him instead of Rachel. He doesn't know until the next morning when he wakes up. He's very frustrated and doesn't know what happened, and so he questions Laban about that and asks, "Why have you deceived me?" And so Laban pretty much brings up some story about their custom is that the older is to marry first and all that. So he tells Jacob, "Fulfill a week and then you can have Rachel as well, but you're going to have to serve 7 more years. So this plan goes into action, and he ends up having to serve 14 years. It talks about Jacob loving Rachel more than Leah, and it's described as Leah being unloved, and God notices that. And because of this, it says God opens up Leah's womb, and Rachel's barren at this time and will be for, you know, a while after this. Talked about this being kind of like a sisterly battle that kicks off after this right here for the about a chapter and a half. And they just start, you know, all sorts of children through their handmaids, through themselves. And as you can see on that chart there, we ended up talking about 11 sons and one daughter getting born over just 7 years of time. So then we end up having all these sons, Israel's sons, Jacob, who becomes Israel, all of his sons born there. We did bring up that Benjamin was not born in Haran, that he's born when they get back to Canaan. So Jacob had been there about 14 years. That makes him about 91 or so. And he's wanting to leave right then. That's what he's wanting to do. But Laban pleads with him to stay. So they negotiate wages again. And he ends up staying about 6 years. Jacob comes up with kind of a scheme to make the wood striped that the animals are going to see. And he's going to get all the speckled and spotted sheep and goats and the brown lambs, and then Laban's going to take the other stuff. Laban was pretty excited about that deal. He must have thought it was going to be a lot more for him, but it turns out that Jacob's flocks flourish and are strong, and Laban's are weak, and Jacob just continues to be successful. You need to remember that the Lord is blessing him. It says, ending up chapter 30, it says, "Thus the man became exceedingly prosperous and had large flocks, female and male servants, and camels and donkeys." So that gets us into tonight. So if you want to follow along, chapter 31, let's read several verses here and then we'll make a few comments. It says, starting with verse 1 of chapter 31, "Now Jacob heard the words of Laban's son, saying, 'Jacob has taken away all that was our father's, and from what our father's and what was our father's, he has acquired all of his wealth.' And Jacob saw the countenance of Laban, and indeed it was not favorable toward him as before. Then the Lord said to Jacob, 'Return to the land of your fathers and to your family, and I will be with you.' So Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah to the field, to his flock, and said to them, 'I see your father's countenance, that it is not favorable toward me as before, but the God of my father has been with me. And you know that with all my might I have served your father, yet your father has deceived me and changed my wages 10 times. But God did not allow him to hurt me. If he said thus, 'The speckled shall be your wages,' then all the flocks bore speckled. And if he said thus, 'The streaked shall be your wages,' then all the flocks bore streaked. So God has taken away the livestock of your father and given them to me. And it happened at that time when the flocks conceived that I lifted my eyes and saw in a dream, and behold, the rams which leaped upon the flocks were streaked, speckled, and gray spotted." Verse 11, "Then the angel of God spoke to me in a dream, saying, 'Jacob,' and I said, 'Here I am.' And he said, 'Lift your eyes now and see, all the rams which leap on the flocks are streaked, speckled, and gray spotted, for I have seen all that Laban is doing to you. I am the God of Bethel, where you anointed the pillar and where you made a vow to me. Now arise, get out of this land and return to the land of your family.' Then Rachel and Leah answered and said to him, 'Is there still any portion or inheritance for us here in our father's house? Are we not considered strangers by him? For he has sold us and also completely consumed our money.' Verse 16, 'For all these riches which God has taken from our father are really ours and our children's. Now then, whatever God has said to you, do it.' Then Jacob rose and set his sons and wives on camels, and he carried away all his livestock and all his possessions which he had gained, his acquired livestock which he had gained, and paid on a ram to go to his father Isaac in the land of Canaan. Now Laban had gone to shear his sheep, and Rachel had stolen the household idols that were her father's. And Jacob stole away, unknown to Laban the Syrian, in that he did not tell him that he intended to flee. So he fled with all that he had. He arose and crossed the river and headed toward the mountains of Gilead." So quickly summarizing some of that was in all those verses real quick. Jacob had been there about 6 more years, total of 20, in Haran. Laban's sons start being ill towards Jacob. They see him flourishing, and they see his father not flourishing anymore. They see what really happened is Jacob being prosperous, and their father is not becoming so prosperous. So Laban's attitude toward Jacob changes as well. That's where God tells him, it's time for you to leave and get out of there. Going back to Genesis 28, verse 15, "Behold, I am with you and will keep you wherever you go and will bring you back to this land, for I will not leave you until I've done what I've spoken to you." So the time has come now, and God's like, it's time to return home. Remember what I told you before. I need you to leave this place and get back to your land. It's time. So we have Jacob having this discussion with Leah and Rachel. And then in verses 5 through 13, Jacob is pretty much recounting to him about God has made all of this happen. You know, all of this flourishing of speckled or spotted or any of that right there, this is the way God wanted to happen. But part of the reason he's explaining that that happened that way is the mistreatment of Laban towards him and the deceit and some of that that went on. So Rachel and Leah tell Jacob they will leave their father and go with him. So they're going to listen to him, submit to his authority, and agree that, you know, you're our husband. What you say that God said you to do, we agree with you. Let's do it. Then down in verse 17, 21, it says, you know, he takes his wives, his sons, his livestock, all his possessions, and leave while Laban was away. I guess he didn't want to deal with Laban directly at that point. You already see what happened every time they had an exchange. He's convinced to stay, and God's pretty much telling him to get out of there at this time. So it looks like he says, I need to find the opportune moment to get out of here. And that's what he does when Laban is away. Kind of a sad point to this part of the story right here is it looks like there was idol worship going on from their family there. And Rachel decides to steal her father's idols there and tucks them away and hides them. So we ask the question, who do these relatives worship? You know, it's false gods and idols. Thinking about looking forward to Joshua chapter 24, you know, verse 15. We quote this quite a bit, but recall this. And if it seems evil to you to serve the Lord, choose yourselves this day whom you will serve, whether the gods which your fathers served that were on the other side of the river, think about that, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. So we got idol worship entering right here. Rachel still steals these idols, but it looks like, you know, it's definitely not a main part of the story right here that all this is going on, but it looks like in some manner idol worship was being done at this place where Jacob had been for 20 years. Okay, in verse 24, the Lord tells Laban in a dream that he is to speak neither good nor evil to Jacob. You know, who knows what Laban in his own mind wanted to do at the time, but God is putting a stop to that. Like, you don't speak evil, don't speak good, and he expects no harm to come to Jacob as he's chasing him down again. And remember, God's the one that directed Jacob. It's time to go. So it describes Laban overtaking Jacob. Takes him 7 days, it describes there in the scriptures, to get to the mountains of Gilead. So he already had a few days head start when it said he was gone, 3 days away to shear. That time happens, he finds out they're gone, and then he takes people and they march on to go get him. And it's about a week that it takes for him to get to the mountains of Gilead where he finds Jacob. And when he confronts Jacob, he pretty much questions a few things. Why did you take my daughters away like captives? That's one thing he said. Why did you not let me kiss my sons and daughters, kind of my family, all this, my grandchildren, my daughters, all this? Why didn't you let me kiss them? And this one's going to really throw Jacob off. And why'd you steal my gods or idols here that you did? So Jacob's not going to have any clue what he's talking about that part right there. But so then Laban says, I could do you harm, but then he recognizes here, and he says, but the God of your father told me, be careful that you speak to Jacob neither good or bad, there in verse 29. Okay, verse 31 and 32, let's read those two real quick. Then Jacob answered and said to Laban, you know, when he's questioned, why'd you leave? Because I was afraid, for I said, perhaps you would take your daughters from me by force. With whomever you find your gods, do not let him live. In the presence of our brethren, identify what I have of yours and take it with you. For Jacob did not know that Rachel had stolen them. So first of all, he's saying, why did I leave? I can't seem to get away from you. It's kind of what he's saying in that way right there. And about these gods, whoever took them, you know, let them die for what they've done. But he sure didn't know it was Rachel that took them, who he loved. But let's continue on. So in verse 32, Jacob tells Laban, go ahead and search my company if that's what you're going to accuse me of. Get to searching. And he said the guilty party will die. And he didn't know that Rachel was the guilty party. Verses 33 through 35, Laban searches, goes through all their tents, you know, rummages through their stuff and doesn't find the idols because Rachel was sitting on them. And at that point right there, Laban didn't find them because Rachel didn't get up for the reasons that was given there. She was sitting on him. She had stuffed him in a saddle and she was sitting on him. She didn't get up when he walks in there. Let's see where I got to. So Jacob angrily rebukes Laban. Remember, he doesn't know. Still to this point, he has no clue that Rachel took anything. So when you get falsely accused, you know, sometimes how do you act when you're like, I didn't do anything wrong and somebody's accusing me of doing this right here? So he's very angry and it kind of brings up his feelings about the last 20 years. And he pretty much goes off on a tirade about how mistreated he was over those 20 years by Laban, including, you know, talking about the change in his wages and all that sort of stuff. So he rebukes Laban for his accusation, and all that covers us down to about verse 42. For time's sake, I'm going to skip this right here, but just an important note, the end of the chapter there, starting with verse 43 right here, after this speech from Jacob, they kind of had a back and forth, and now Laban wants to make a covenant between them that they not, you know, battle each other. And so you can read some of that on your own later if you didn't before class, but I'll highlight a few points. Down in verse 44, he says, "Now therefore, come, let us make a covenant, you and I, and let it be a witness between you and me." Laban called it in his native tongue, Jagar Sahudutha. But Jacob called it Galeed, talking about the place we're at where they're making this covenant. We'll get back to that in a minute. They also call it Mizpah. It says there, because he said, "May the Lord watch between you and me when we are absent from one another." So they go through some of the what they want to happen and pile up stones and make an agreement, have a meal. And Laban goes on to say, I will not pass beyond this heap to you, and you will not pass beyond this heap that we made in this pillar to me for harm. And then finishing up that at the end there in the last few verses of the chapter, and it says, "And Jacob swore by the fear of his father Isaac." So that's kind of interesting there, because Laban's saying, let us go, you know, have this covenant with the God of Abraham, the God of Nahor, the God of their father, judge between us. And Jacob says, swear by the fear of his father Isaac right there. We'll talk about that in just a second. So they do so. And it says, early in the morning, Laban arises. He got his chance of what he said he wanted, to kiss his family goodbye. He does. And then Laban departs and returns to his place right there. So let's just discuss a little bit of some of the verbiage used right there. The word that Laban threw out there was an Aramaic heap of testimony, but in Hebrew it was also, but what Jacob used was Galeed, that was also heap of testimony, but he spoke in Hebrew there, or called it the name that would have been a Hebrew name right there for the place that were that they were at. The Mizpah just means watchtower, where they were talking about, let God watch over us, and that we keep this covenant that we made right here. So that's what all those places meant. So we got a lot of names thrown out there in that section right there. So Laban moves on, kisses his family, and he returns back to his home. And Jacob's going to be staying where God told him to go, back in that area. But let's make a quick comment about this Genesis 31:42, where it says, "Unless the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac had been with me, surely now you would have sent me away empty-handed." So let's talk a little bit about this fear of Isaac term that's used right here. This commentary from Matthew Henry on that verse says, "Jacob calls him the God of Abraham and the fear of Isaac, for Abraham was dead now and had gone to that world where perfect love cast out fear." There's no more fear for Abraham, but Isaac was still living at this time, sanctifying the Lord in his heart as his fear and his dread. So I thought that was some good points to let us think about right there, because when you're first reading through that and you just hear the way he says it, like, why did he say the fear of Isaac? And maybe that'll help help you a little bit with some understanding of what was going on there. Okay, so before we get into chapter 32, are there any comments or questions on chapter 31 or anything up to this point? Okay, so let's jump right into 32. So This is really a reuniting with Esau, which is maybe scary, maybe not, but we'll get into reading a few and see what's going on in the mind of Jacob here. Let's read the first five verses of chapter 32. So Jacob went on his way, and the angels of God met him. When Jacob saw them, he said, "This is God's camp." And he called the name of that place Mahanaim. And you see at the bottom, it's like two companies. What it means, they're a company of Jacob's, company of angels. Verse 3, then Jacob sent messengers before him to Esau. So he's getting back to that land right there. And what's in the back of his mind? When I left, I was being threatened to be killed by my brother. So when he gets back there, he sends messengers before Esau, verse 3, in the land of Seir, where he was, the country of Edom. And he commanded them, saying, "Speak thus to my lord Esau. Thus your servant Jacob says, I have dwelt with Laban and stayed there until now. I have oxen, donkeys, flocks, and male and female servants, and I have sent to tell my lord that I may find favor in your sight." And then in verse 6, then the messengers returned to Jacob. This isn't going to go the way he was hoping. He's just hoping at first, you know, if I do this, hopefully it's going to go exactly the way I want it. Well, in verse 6, the messengers returned to Jacob saying, "We came to your brother Esau, and he's also coming to meet you, and 400 men are with him." Well, what's the first thing that's going to be in your mind? If it's the brother, you're hoping that the brother may say, "Great, I forgive you, let me come back." When he comes with 400 men, you're probably thinking, this isn't going the way that I was hoping it would go here. And that's exactly what Jacob's thinking here. So Esau's coming with these 400 men. Why is he coming? Or at least why does Jacob think he's coming with 400 men? Is it revenge? Are we going back to 20 years before? That's kind of what Jacob's thinking, or that's what he's afraid of anyway. And why is he afraid about this? Look back to the story from a week ago. What did we talk about? You know, the supplanter, from the time he came out grabbing of the hill, what happens? He takes away his birthright. And then the major deception, when Esau expects to be getting the blessing, Jacob gets the blessing. He goes through this big deceit and having the hair on his hands and neck. His mother helps him and all that. So that's what he thinks that Esau has on his mind. He might have thought maybe that was swept under the carpet by now, but with 400 men coming, he's thinking, this may not turn out the way that I hope here. So Jacob, because he hears of the 400 coming, he divides his company for protection. He thinks if we're attacked or one group's attacked, the other company can escape, down in verse 7. Verses 9 through 12, Jacob goes into prayer. Very smart decision on his part right here. You shouldn't be taking on things on your own. You're stressed out and you got yourself into a problem. You need to stop what you're doing and think and take this example here. And Jacob goes to God praying for deliverance from Esau here. Going back to that 28:15 again, what did God tell him? "I'm with you and will keep you wherever you go and will bring you back to this land." God didn't want to bring him back to get slaughtered. You know, he wanted to bring him back because he's of the lineage of Abraham. He's the chosen son here. So let's move on, read a few more verses here, verses 13 through 17 of chapter 32. So he lodged there at the same night and took what came to his hand as a present for Esau's brother. Look, this is a lot of stuff here starting in verse 14. 200 female goats, 20 male goats, 200 ewes, 20 rams, 30 milk camels with their colts, 40 cows, 10 bulls, 20 female donkeys, and 10 foals. Then he delivered them to the hand of his servants, every drove by itself, and said to his servants, "Pass over before me, go before me, and put some distance between successive droves." And he commanded the first one, saying, "When Esau, my brother, meets you and asks you, saying, 'To whom do you belong and where are you going? Whose are these in front of you?'" Verse 18, "Then you shall say, 'They are your servant Jacob's. It is a present sent to my lord Esau. And behold, he is also behind us.' So he commanded the second, the third, and all who followed the drove, saying, 'In this manner you shall speak to Esau when you find him, and also say, Behold, your servant Jacob is behind us.'" So he's telling all of them to say the same thing as Esau comes upon each of them. "For he said, 'I will appease him with the present that goes before me, and afterward I will see his face. Perhaps he'll accept me.' So he's like, this plan, maybe, you know, presenting him with gifts, maybe he'll accept me as a brother and not as somebody he wants to kill. Verse 21, so the present went on before him, but he himself lodged that night in camp. So just kind of reviewing over those verses, he gathers a massive present of all these droves of animals, drove by drove, it says, which is meaning herd, flock, or group, gathers all these separate groups, sends the servants ahead of him, and tells him what to say when they meet Esau. And he's pretty much saying, tell him these are a present from your brother, and he's coming, he's behind us, but he wanted us to give you all of this. Okay, then we get to one of those strange areas we get to sometimes in scriptures, one of those hard to believe sort of stories. It just really catches us off right here, but an amazing story here in these next few verses, 24 through 28. It says in verse 24, Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him until the breaking of day. Now when he saw that he did not prevail against him, he touched the socket of his hip, and the socket of Jacob's hip was out of joint as he wrestled with him. And he said, let me go, for the day breaks. But he said, I will not let you go unless you bless me. So he said to him, what's your name? He said, Jacob. And he said, your name shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel, for you have struggled with God and with men and have prevailed. So here we had those times when Abram was changed to Abraham. Now you have the part here when there's this wrestling going on here that Jacob is now going to be known as Israel. Continuing that story, verse 29, then Jacob asked, saying, tell me your name, I pray. And he said, why is it that you ask me about my name? And he blessed him there. So Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, for I have seen God face to face, and my life is preserved. Just as he crossed over Penuel, it's just another pronunciation for the same place, just as he crossed over Penuel, the sun rose on him, and he limped on his hip. Therefore, to this day, the children of Israel do not eat the muscle that shrank, which is on the hip socket, because he touched the socket of Jacob's hip and the muscle that shrank. So quickly reviewing this part of this story, he had sent everyone across what's called a ford, the ford of Jabbok, which is the part of the river that was shallow that they could walk through. And then he wrestles with what's said at first as a man, but as you go through and read all of that in verse 24 through 32, it's based on your translation. Looks like it's God, especially what's said about him. Your translation may also say angel. Some people have thought maybe this is Christ as well, but different ones, but this is a supernatural. It's not really a man, although it says a man in the first of the verse there, but when you get down to verse 30, there's a reference there that we'll get to in just a second. But they wrestle all the way through daybreak, and Jacob's name is changed at that time to Israel, because that means he who struggles or strives with God. So look at 32:30 again when you're reading that, and Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, and he says, for I have seen God face to face, and my life is preserved. So seems there that Jacob believes that he wrestled God at that time. And just as I had already said while I was reading, Peniel and Penuel are just they're the same place, but pretty much a reference to the same location. But that the name of that means the face of God. I'll give you a chance to make comments if you like in just a second. Just a few slides on pictures here. Excuse me with the coughing. Anyway, they were on this. All of these little towns and places that we're talking about right here are along the Jabbok River that's here, which is the river just above the Dead Sea on the screen there. And there's several locations in there. If you'll notice where the number 2 is on your screen there, some that we'll get into here and some we've already mentioned, Succoth, Penuel, the Mahanaim. All those are along the Jabbok River. And then when we talked about when it said that he was crossing over that right there, you can see here's a nice picture of the Jabbok where the ford is right there that's really shallow. and it was easy to cross at that point right there. Okay, any comments or questions on chapter 32? Okay, moving right along. This gets into chapter 33. We only have the 17 verses here. Jacob prepares to meet Esau and his 400 men who are approaching. So that's how it starts there in verse 1 of chapter 33. He separates the wives with their children. You know, think about that other slide we have where we had Rachel, Leah, and the handmaids. So that's how he separated them there. Sent the concubines out first with the sons that were born to them, then Leah, and then lastly Rachel with Joseph. Joseph would be about 6 years now, 6 years old at this point. So it also says right before this meeting takes place that Jacob bowed down 7 different times before Esau. He's really, you know, he's wanting to make sure there's nothing but kindness that's emanating from him as he's approaching him. You know, you're my brother. That's the vibe he's putting out. He still doesn't know exactly what's going to happen yet, but he sent all these gifts out. He's bowing before him. He's showing some humility here. And now we have Jacob and Esau about to meet. And what's it going to be? And again, be thinking in Jacob's mind right here, what's it going to be? Is it going to be revenge? Is it going to be war? Is it going to be payback? He doesn't know yet. Verse 4 tells us what it's going to be is brotherly love. So what's happened after 20 years, which is a good ending to the story, what we would hope would happen is that after 20 years has gone by, Esau does love his brother and is, you know, willing to accept him and willing to accept these gifts. And we'll get a little bit more into that exchange in a minute. But it's a very pleasant experience is what's happened here from what could have been had it gone the other way and what Jacob was afraid of. So in verse 4, we'll read that verse because it's a very good verse and it's just, it's great. It's the way brothers should be. But verse 4, but Esau ran to meet him and embraced him and fell on his neck and kissed him and they wept. Surely Jacob couldn't have expected that great of a greeting, but you know, it must have really touched Esau's heart, what Jacob was trying to show at that time based on the what he could have dwelled on from the bad memories he had. But verse 4 kind of explains a very different meeting there. So Jacob introduces his family after that down in verses 5 through 7. And then they get into discussing the gifts, Esau's reaction to the gift. Verse 9, he says, I have enough. So they use this word enough here. So Esau said, I have enough already. I don't need all this. Keep it for yourself. I already have enough. Jacob's reply in verse 10 and 11 in our Bibles is translated this same word. He says, please take it because I have enough. And so there's going to be a little bit of difference in what was meant by each one saying enough here. And we'll get onto that on this next slide here. In Bob Waldron's book on page 96, he discussed this way. He said, in our English language, the two terms the brothers use to describe their possessions are alike, enough. But in the original, Esau said, I have enough, meaning I have all I need, plenty. Jacob used a stronger expression, and he said, I have everything, all. To see Esau's beloved brother welcoming him home made Jacob feel that he had no need for anything else in life. Every need was filled, not only by this thing, but we know what Jacob had that Esau didn't have was that blessing from God that God told him. We've already talked about that again, where God says, I'm going to be with you wherever you go. I'm going to take care of you. So the enough translated the same words a little bit here, but their meaning stacked behind it was a little bit different. So kind of getting to the end of what we're going to cover tonight. Esau says, let us take our journey. Let us go and I will go before you. So he's saying, follow me. Let's go. Let's go down to Seir. But Jacob said to him, my Lord knows that the children are weak. The flocks and herds which are nursing are with me. And if the men should drive them, hard one day, all the flock will die. Please let my Lord go on ahead before his servant. I will lead on slowly at a pace which the livestock that go before me and the children are able to endure, until I come to see my Lord and Seir. So kind of store that in your head for a minute, because he's pretty much telling him, I'll follow behind you. Verse 15, and Esau said, now let me leave you with some of my people who are with me. But he said, what need is there? Let me find favor in the sight of my Lord. So they're going to separate. What ends the lesson tonight down in verse 16 to 17. Esau's going to go there. Jacob said, I'll follow along. But what actually we find out as we're reading the last two verses, Jacob really didn't have an intent to go, it doesn't seem, because as soon as Esau is out of there, he doesn't go. He stays around there, around the Jabbok River. He goes to this place, Succoth, or whatever, however you pronounce that, meaning booths or tents. And it says he builds a house and booths for his livestock. So he wasn't slowly going behind him. He goes back up to, or stays at the Jabbok River there and does not follow Esau at all. So Esau goes home and Jacob stays there around the Jabbok River. So let's talk about a few of the faith and failings of families. Again, if you have one, you know, raise your hand or get my attention. You could add to this. We had a lot of good in these chapters tonight. Rachel and Leah said to Jacob, whatever God has said to you, do it. They're submitting to their husband. They're agreeing with him. Jacob gives credit to God for his prosperity when talking to Laban. He said, this is God that did this. And he should have said that, because it was God keeping his promise to him. Jacob prays to God when he's afraid of Esau. Lesson for us, we're stressed out or whatever, we should be going to God daily in prayers, but when things are bad, instead of handling it in the wrong way, we need to go seek God's counsel, which is what Jacob did here. Jacob's renamed Israel because God recognizes his faithfulness right there, his striving with him. Esau forgives and shows that he loves Jacob still after these 20 years, after all that deceit. Jacob recognizes that God has given him everything or all. And then the failings, the one thing that really stood out to me was the Rachel, number one, stealing, number two, bringing idols and idol worship in as she's heading back to the land of Canaan. So that's pretty sad there. Did anybody have anything else they want? Anybody else as class is ending? Anybody else got a comment? I know in a lot of his books, he does refer to it. That's really the one thing that stood out, but I don't recall. Wayne, do you remember anything specifically? I don't, but you know, you only know what you know. Some of those are hard. Starts out, we've had several chances in here to talk about when it says men and they ended up being angels or whatever. But I guess what I lean on is himself saying, I've seen God face to face and prevailed. So that's how I see that. So for Sunday, be prepared if you want to read ahead. It's 33:18 where we left off tonight, chapter 34, 35, 36. Then we'll skip 37 and then also try to squeeze in 38. So a lot of reading there. Thanks for your attention.